Welcome to another episode of Israel Tech. I'm excited to have here with me my friend Tal Colander, co-founder and CEO of Gitpool. And we're actually in her home. She has a beautiful crib. I hope that's okay that I told people that. So first off, tell us a little bit about kind of like, let's work a little bit what you're working on now, a little bit of Gitpool, and how did Gitpool come to be?
Well, I need to take you back in time, if you are okay with it. Like 20 years, a bit more. I'm more than 35. 22 years when I first got, you know, like a computer, and then the internet came. Without even knowing that, that I would say slowly but surely became a hacker and a professional one, but no one really knew back then what hacker means.
How old were you?
13.
How does one slowly but surely become a hacker, right?
Like, because,
what, like on your own?
Yeah. I saw some, you know, like video, not video, but like internet games that, well, one of the things were that I expected to be number one, but I just didn't finish number one. I mean, when I woke
what
up
game?
The day after, yeah. Like so many games, like, so, well, stupid games, okay? But it's like the prices are, well, so, you know, like, I mean, for me, it was essential. Like, oh, I mean, I want to take this, you know, like a water for life or for like a few years. Or I want to get like a foos table. How do you call it? Like,
foosball table.
A flight to Germany. So many things that, and again, there are some, I don't know, take snake on steroids, okay? But those games and some kind of Mario and other things. But I just wanted to finish number one, and I was very good at some of them. But and when I let's say when I woke up the day after and I saw that I'm not number one, and I saw someone out of a sudden came to be number one, and I was like number two. I mean, but it was never like part of the, I would say, like he was never ranked before. It was out of a sudden he became and number one. I said, okay, someone must have been cheating here, and if they can do it, I can do it. So that's how I learned how to do it.
But who taught you? Like, so did you ever cheat in the video games too? Did you say, you know what, screw it. If this guy's going to hack his way and beat me, then I'm going to hack and take it too. Did you do that?
No, it was just, I mean.
We won't tell anyone.
No. It was a trigger for me. I mean, it was like, okay. I mean, it's like, because I wanted to have those prices, I mean, so much that I just decided to say, okay, I can do it as well. I mean, because it was something that back in the days, I mean, you didn't have the Google to get help with or the OpenAI or whatever it is today that you can definitely have the, you know, like the extra help of how to do things in an easier way. Back in the days, you needed to do all of, you know, all yourself. So that is how being a hacker was really nice, because I won like special prizes and before I was 18, before the army, actually, I had my first $1 million. So that's pretty much how.
That's awesome.
That's really nice.
There's 5 years between 13 and 18 when you went to the army, right?
Yes, actually.
So what do you do in 5 years of hack, or like, what did your teenage years look like?
I know that it doesn't sound like, but I was very social. Okay, so it's like I have many friends, and no worries about it. Especially when I was younger, when the computer and the screens weren't that, you know, like
prevalent,
like heavy as it is today. So and before the army, so I used to. It was right after the it was in the high school when my parents got divorced, and then I needed to choose who should I be with, and
whoever has the computer.
Both of them. So it's like and one of the things that I really liked is that so I stayed in my mom's house, and my father moved to Tel Aviv, my mom stayed in Rosh Ha'in, and in the high school I went to the computer science, I would say, like computer science thing, which is like 10 units in computer science, 5 units physics, 5 English, 5 math, blah blah blah. And then I met more geek friends, and they are friends of mine until these days. And then I just started. The reason actually why the $1 million came is because I created with another friend, anonymous friend of mine, We created something that everyone is using today, which is email protection. I'm pretty sure that everyone knows what it is. When you get an email, even in Google, when you get an email and the email looks suspicious or malicious, then Google alerts you. Back in the days, again, nothing was there, and security wasn't even something that people think about, only physical security. And the email, so I created a client, we created actually a client and a server package, and only on one, but you need to install it on each and every device. It was very heavy, but we just went to some places. I wanted to talk to the IT or to the manager. You know, I was very young, 16 and a half. Just pitched them the whatever email protection. I said, hey, today you can get a malicious email, blah, blah, blah. And they just told me, okay, yeah, I mean, it's okay. Let's say, don't call us, we call you. I was very young, I mean. And then I said, okay, I took their business card. And obviously, they needed to buy at some point. So they needed to get a malicious email just to see that it works. So they got a malicious email, and then they paid for the
software. Did you send them the malicious email?
Not really me. It was like some kind of server somewhere in the world. But again, they got a malicious email. Maybe we can remove it from this one.
I'm immediately regretting being friends with you.
No, it's like I used to be a black attacker. And again, no one really knew what it is. And the thing is that when I joined the army, so I started in a fighter pilot course, and then after a few months, so I continue into the computer units like MAMRAM, and then special units, but again in the computer. And one thing that we did over there is that, I needed to get my security clearance, and they needed to see my background. They said, okay, Tal, I mean, all we need to do, because we need to train you, like, to be the white attacker now, and use your skills in order to help your country instead of your pocket. So what you need to do right now is you need to sign on so many forms that you are not going to do it again. And
that's dumb. That sounds, doesn't it?
But I love my country.
No, for sure.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah.
Was it hard for you to sign? Did you to like think about it?
On these days, I really wanted to be like the chief of staff of the army. It's like, that was my, I mean, I didn't care about the money. I mean, it's like,
it's awesome.
I wanted just to be the leader in the army. And that's actually what helped me to say, yeah, no brainer, of course. I sign wherever you want. Because for me, my country was way important than
of course, yeah. Well, you already were doing well. You're already doing well as a teen, so
yeah.
I mean, I remember like when like $20 was a lot of money for me when I was a teenager.
Yeah,
$50
exactly.
Bucks.
Exactly.
So this is, you know, so obviously the amount that you were talking about. You go to the army. You say, okay, I'm leaving all this behind me at least for now, and then they have you. Okay, now you're going to be a hacker for the government. I mean, for the army by extension. What does that look like? Tell us about like the training that goes into it. One, how did they select you? Did you apply? Tell us about kind of the whole process of going from a teenage civilian who's already been succeeding in here, becoming basically property of the army, what that process was like and how you found your footing in the army.
Unfortunately, I didn't have the, what we say in Israel, kombina. Like I didn't have the right connections to go into the right places in the army. So everything I did, you know, like by myself. And one of the things that happened, and again, it's a combination of luck. It's a combination of, luck and also timing and to be in the right place at the right time. So what I believe after the fighter pilot course that I didn't finish, then I just continued into the computer unit. I finished as I've got a certificate of like the excellent of MAMRAM, like and after that I just decided that I want to extend my service and to go somewhere else and to affect more, and this is where they took me to some special unit, another special unit, which is I actually was in Rafael in the north, and it was such an amazing journey because this is where we saw how microcosmos the army is. So it's like what we do exists also, I mean, out there. So because we saw so many, you know, like contracts from IBM, CA back in the days that became Broadcom, whatever, VMware, or Dell, Dell today, but it's like VMware, and so many people from the technology companies that, you know, when you were in the army, I mean, that's where you wanted to go. I mean, like, wow, I finished the army, I can go there. It's like, whoa, because people didn't really feel the startup ecosystem back in 2012, you know, 2010. And this was the, everyone, I would say, like, everyone pretty much expected when they finished the computer, whatever, they will go there. And they felt sorry for the people that are, again, most of them are men, obviously, that go to the army and they cannot choose to go to computer units, right? Because they have high profile, they should be fighters. And when they finish the army, they cannot go and get high salary like us. They need to work very hard. They need to go and go to some university, college. And I got like, I got lots of luck because they just chose me and the path was just there for me. And every unit that I went to, I just felt that I can just go and learn more and more with time. I at the beginning I should have even go to be an officer, and then something happened. So it's like I decided like to stay as a professional tech lead. And then back in the days, I was IT and security was together. And then they started splitting a little bit the security from the IT, and then security became cyber. So I was in this generation when everything was together. And then when security had like high hopes to do something that the IT will never deliver. So it's like, I was pretty much in this gap before it was, before it tore it apart, and before like the teams usually didn't really, you know, they didn't really find a nice match together. So when I finished the army, the military service, I continue into some, you know, one of those companies. And my last company before Gitpol was Dell EMC. Actually, I started at EMC that was acquired by Dell. And after that, as a cybersecurity lead, and then kind of a, I would say like IT CISO, like really depends in some places from defense forces to even like, you know, like financial, etc. And I used to do, because I was very techie and I didn't want, I felt that if I'm going to go off keyboard, I will lose it. So I used to write the same code in different places because I said, how come there is no solution? Because Microsoft should have it. And that's actually how Gitpol came, this idea. And I just wrote it to one of my best friends, Tal Katran, on a piece of napkin and a pub, in a pub. It was next to the Kamari Theater in Israel, in Tel Aviv. I just, on a piece of napkin, I wrote everything. It was so techie. And he was like, Tal, no matter what you write, I'm with you. I mean, just tell me what I need to do. So that's it. I just told him, he used to work at Israel Aerospace Industry. And I just said, listen, you need to go to the IT department and to talk to give me the desktop engineer and to go to the CISO and blah, blah, blah. And I just guided him what to do. And this is where I found even Gilad and Yaakov. At the beginning, Yaakov didn't really believe that the problem exists. And then Gilad just told me, Tal, I'm with you. And let's have Yaakov also on board. And when Gilad came with me to the Israel aerospace industry, the first thing they said was, Tal, we've been looking for the solution for decades. I mean, wow. We know it's a problem in the past, it's a problem in the present, and it is a problem in the future. We need this like right here, right now.
But well, what is this? Well, why don't you talk about what this is? So today, what did they need that you were providing?
Today it become something that finally the awareness on that is very easy. Is what we do is we are solving a big issue of device misconfiguration. But what we are solving is, instead of having only detection when everyone can tell you what is wrong, we are the solution for the remediation, but the safe remediation. Because today people are so much afraid of clicking on the wrong button because they don't know what's the impact. we can just see it, we can address it with a zero disruption. Nothing will be impacted when you will address something that is out there and the default setting or human error that everyone wants to address. Most of the organizations today, they have something that is called vulnerability assessment or management. They have something that is called antivirus, EDR. They have something that is called, email protection, okay? But they are all struggling with the base thing that they don't know how to address today except of manually, which is device misconfiguration. They see things, they know that they exist, they know that hackers 20 years ago and even today they are still abused, okay? I mean, hackers are not, I mean, they are very advanced, but they are very advanced in their way in your organization. Once they are in your organization, they move laterally as they used to do 20 years ago. And I kid you not, and from experience. But it's like, what I can even add is that last week, you know, maybe I say it maybe as a founder, okay, great. But last week, I've been to a very, I would say, selective event of JP Morgan Chase. One of the, and the speaker was Pat, the CISO for JPM. And he said that close to 80% of all attacks, current attacks, are not because of malware, are not because of phishing, are not because of patching that are not, that the device or whatever is not patched, but are because of misconfigurations. And it was, you know, music to my ears. That's exactly what I needed to hear. I didn't even know that I was there. Then obviously, people that know me, they introduced me to him. And then, yeah, it was like a great bonding. But, you know, like having the fact that even, you know, like many people from, I would say, call it like XDR, from Palo, CrowdStrike, were there. And, you know, they heard it. But again, all they wanted to, I mean, it's like what he said, and he said all about that, remediation and misconfiguration, those pieces are missing today. And obviously automation of that. So it's like everything that I just needed, the PR was out there. That's what I needed. I will take a quote from here, from him, and one day it will be on our LinkedIn. He will allow me, and then we can just run with it. But again, people understand that this is something that everyone needs.
If you can just talk for 1 minute about, let's really dumb it down for people that don't understand cybersecurity or technology or business really. What is remediation?
So today, most of the thing that everyone knows is that, oh, I see what is wrong. Okay, so I have the detection. After the detection, you need, okay, I mean, what are you going to do? It's like, think about you are right now that you know that you have some problem in your home, okay? I don't know, your electricity doesn't work or something like that. Okay, you have the detection. Now you need to take care of it. You need to fix it. Okay, so you need to remediate it in a way. Now, most of the remediations today, most of the tools, let's say, they will only tell you how to remediate, okay? Let's say if you want to fix your electricity, here are the things. I mean, then you need to do this, that, blah, blah, blah. Most of the tools will tell you what are the steps to stop A, B, C, D, E. No one will actually fix it. But let me even rephrase it. Not that no one. Most of them won't fix it. And the ones that will fix some of the things will just tell you, click here and to fix it. But then, if you want to fix something, you don't know if you are going to fix something, if something else won't be broken or won't be impacted.
Right.
No one knows. What we do is we change the approach of the remediation. So we said, not only click remediation, no. Not only that we have in Gitpol the auto remediation. We have the ability to assure you, to know before you go, hey, if you click on the remediation, that's okay. You can revert it later. Okay. That is another thing that we added, but you can see what will be impacted, if any. Okay. Most of the things, that is what we call, you have quick wins, remediate once, nothing will be impacted. But there are some things that you will see that you have an impact. What is the impact and how to address it? So that's how we fix the problem of the remediation in the world. That's why I had yesterday the call with Microsoft, the CEO, Michal. Microsoft Israel.
Breverman.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's great.
We interviewed her.
She's awesome. She's awesome. So Michal and the CrowdStrike guys and now with the AWS and Microsoft, like as you know, like the cloud part, as partnership with them. Obviously Palo as well. It's like we are people hear about us. Now we are everywhere. Now we become more, I would say, in people just know that we exist. People know that in order to fix things, they don't need to do it manually anymore. They just reach out to us. So that's how we changed the perception or the way that people deal with remediation today.
Back to your, I feel like you skipped over something. You're a hacker in the army. What does that do? What does a hacker in the army look like?
I can't reveal all of my secrets, but I always say to people, you know, things that you see in Mossad movies, whatever, our interpretation of FBI, which is the Shabak and or MI5 again, and even like, I don't know, Fauda, whatever, everything that you see that and Tehran, that you see that the computer is involved and there are some hackers over there, just consider as like at least 50% of it is real or doable or was in the past or is used in the present. So that's pretty much just let your imagination work.
That's exactly what I tell people. I say I say something about AI in a different way. I say when it comes to cybersecurity, just use your imagination and then go further.
And exactly.
And keep imagining.
Exactly. It's an endless world.
And with AI, I say, you want to know what it can do? Just use your imagination and then just take it another step and another step.
Yeah.
And it doesn't end. Anything where it's unreal, right?
It's pretty much, and wow, sometimes even the imagination can be nothing compared to what happens in the reality. So yeah, that's something that I just, I discovered.
Awesome. So we got something I found interesting is that you've said you're CISO. I was looking at your LinkedIn, right? You're a CISO and security architect at Avnet, at Dell EMC. For those that don't, what is the difference between a CISO and a security architect?
I found some CISOs that are super techy, super, you know, like connected. They are hands-on. They know exactly. And there are some CISOs that just need to guide and to tell. And again, it really depends on the organization culture, the size, and obviously like the people that are in the organization. So some of the CISOs, they just highlight on what needs to be addressed. Some of the CISOs will tell you. Some of the CISOs will be so down to earth, will be super connected to whatever, and they will make the decisions themselves. Some of them will just tell what is needed, and then they will just delegate to the team, you need to do the job. That's the difference between those CISOs. That is why security architect should be
more technical. So CISOs are managers, security architect are tech people.
Yes.
And they're both really managers.
Yes.
Let's talk about building up of Gitpool, right? So you go to Gilad, he's like, let's bring in Yaakov. Yaakov was bought in on it. How exactly does one go ahead and just start a startup? Or how did
It's a nice story. So Gilad and Yaakov had a previous exit to VMware. They built a company that is called Digital Fuel that was acquired to VMware back in 2011. And since then, they were looking for their next challenge. I found them, again, timing is everything. I found them in 2017, I would say. And after I found them, it was like a great bonding from day one. And they just said, Tal, let's do it solo, no VC money. We all have money, so that's okay, let's write it.
That was in 2017.
Yes.
Right, because you've made your, okay, and they had their exits.
Yes, they had it in 2011.
How much money, how much money did you guys put in from your pocket?
Time. It's like we invested time, we wrote the code. The three of us, and I was the customer facing. Back in 2019, we first needed, I mean, someone, I mean, like customers that became from beta to like, or a beta customer, but finally we said, okay, it's time for us to charge for that. And when they wanted to pay, then we said, oh, we need to have a company, right?
So, you had a product, you had the code, you had a solution, but you weren't even incorporated in a legal entity, total trust, everything. You didn't have any contract until someone's like, here's my money, give me your product.
Exactly.
So you guys founded in 2017?
Officially, it was like mid.
I mean, when did you guys come together and start to code? And when did you guys, let's say, get your first 2017?
The first line of code was November 2017.
And then in your first revenue dollar?
When we incorporated, which was like May 2019.
Okay, amazing. Okay, so a year and a half later. Beautiful. And so you've collected. So what exactly were you were just selling just remediation then? How much has it changed since then to now? The industry and Gitpool, because you guys are growing tremendously. And maybe we could just talk about the fact, what is it like to continue to bootstrap? And like, you had no expenses, basically, you're saying. It was just your time.
It started only the three of us. We had a few dozens of customers alone. Bootstrap, again, profitable from day one, right? And then we decided, okay, time for us to... to get some money. I mean, like to get some salary because we need it. It's a company. We cannot really have money in, but without money out. And we tried everything from scratch. We had so many mistakes. In the beginning, because we didn't really know how to do it right. I mean, it's like, oh, okay. So we hired at the beginning. We went like we started to go like every startup. Like, let's go to this law firm. Let's go to this accounting. Let's go. And then we found out that they charge us like startups. And because startups have VC money, they have so much money. They just spend like without.
So stupid.
Exactly. And I said, okay. I mean, no, we cannot spend something like that. And we want to hire people. How can we hire people, pay this, pay that, 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 that. And because we started only in Israel, remember. And then we just grew exponentially year over year. Double ourselves from the income, the revenue. And then we had more and more and more people.
What did you need more people to do? I understand you needed an office manager, someone to do accounting because now you're collecting money. But the actual technical stuff, if the code was built, how much did you do to maintain it? Was it updating it? Tell us about what it is that suddenly, let's say, that your guys reached your ceiling. If you've already had a bunch of customers.
Every single time we had a bottleneck, we just address it. It was R&D, we hired an R&D. Sales, we went to sales. We wanted to go to the US, we went to the... I mean, it's like every single time we saw that the bottleneck is coming or we had a bottleneck, then we addressed it in, again, the same time. We did obviously build some plans for future and everything, and we go by those plans, but we go... and let's say the plan says, for example, in 2021, we need to hire 5 people and 2 of them R&D, 3 of them are... whatever, sales, customer success. And it's not that we had, until May, we need to have this. No, it's like the entire year, this is what we need to hire. And then we saw, okay, right now the bottleneck is because customers want more. Let's develop more, then we need more R&D because we need more hands-on. Then we need more people to work with customers because I was the one who worked with 60 plus customers alone, like, every day I had like calls from 8 a.m. to like 7, 8 p.m. It was very hard because, again, only in Israel. And I needed also to write some code. I needed also to be the pre-sale, the product, the sales engineer, the sales. And then we just saw that being a bootstrap, okay, now we need more hands-on. We need more talented people because we need to build a company. And then in the major change... Actually, we had 2 major changes. One of them was when we first started to go from on-prem to cloud. So we started in our on-prem solution to install it on them. And again, people just, they wanted to stay on-prem. It's okay. They moved to the cloud, but with Gitpool, they were okay with staying on-prem. But then we said, okay, we cannot maintain the on-prem anymore. It's very hard. Let's move to the cloud. So our first change was moving to the cloud. It was early last year. The second major change was this, the first quarter of this 2024, when we just decided that we are going to be way more mature. We changed the entire code.
What made you decide to be mature, right? Because like, I look at you, you know, you're just screaming maturity. Like what makes it go to been like, I'm a hacker doing our own, we're bootstrapping, we're doing our own thing. We're independently wealthy.
Correct.
And then kind of like, it's so an antithesis, I feel like, of your personality and your culture, which I'm so attracted to.
Thank you. We were acting like mom and pop shop, okay? Oh, yeah, you go here. Oh, no, you go here now. Oh, yeah. And we just said, okay, we can't. We can't function like this anymore. And we brought, we went down from 26 to 20. It was essential because, not because of Money Saver, because we are profitable from day one. We finished 2023 in 10 million. And again, it was amazing, okay? Like it was amazing achievement for a bootstrap. So, and obviously we had so many calls from VCs, from whatever, we want to invest, we want to have blah, 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 we want to be part of it. One of the things that we decided is we need to be, in order to go exponentially, and exponential growth, we need to have the right people. We need to have the right, we need to have the people in the US, people from the sales, the CRO, the VP sales, everyone should be in the US. We need to have a VP BizDev because the Cloud Alliance, Tech Alliance, I mean, people reach out to us and we do not have a good, I mean, we can address it, but it will be a mess. We need to have experts. So we bought Alliance person, actually. It's Mo, she's here with us here in the room. And then we brought marketing that he knows exactly, like, okay, like he will be a product marketing, but also marketing because he knows how to build campaigns, he knows how to, we needed leads. I mean, we needed leads in order to transact leads at the end of the day to prospects, right? To paying prospects, because we knew that our POCs, every time we test the product in a customer, it becomes a PO. We know it, okay? I mean, almost all of them, okay? So, and we just changed the entire culture of no more small deals like 20K, 30K. No, we don't want it. I mean, because we invested the same amount of time on small deals rather than 100K and 150K. Why should we? So we just removed the small deals. We were focusing on biggies. And it's like, well, now we have like one person to deal with the SMBs. And the rest are only on big accounts, nice. Only on big money. So we changed the entire culture, but also this is the maturity level, because back in the days, oh, every customer that can pay us whatever, 5K, 10, no, we take it. But no, then we saw that if we want the 5, 10K, we cannot hire talented people. I mean, it's like, because it's very hard to maintain all of those small checks. And again, I appreciate and value every single dollar. But in order to grow, in order to become, and now we are 40 people, okay? So it's like from 20 in end of January to 40, and we are mid-May today, 2024, that's insane. Like to double ourselves in 4 months. And not to
Are you worried about your culture growing so quickly? Because in a sense, like you said, you had to scale down, not for financial reasons, but kind of just... we need to get good alignment and all that. And, you know, and obviously a few people do the most of the work. Are you worried about the culture being watered down and the personality and how you do things growing so quickly? I've been at companies and clients' offices when they went to this exponential growth. And I was speaking to the marketers hanging out there. And she tells me, yeah, like 6 months ago, I knew everyone by name. 2/3 of people on this floor, I don't even recognize, I don't know their names. We have a birthday cake every other day in the kitchen because we're that many people now, right? A new birthday cake for this man. I was like, and she wanted to leave, whatever. She didn't, it didn't feel like she was looking for a family, but she just, it lost its startup vibe and its unique personality. Do you fear that at all? Sorry, I didn't mean to like.
No, it's trip like, you out. I love building good cultures. That's what I did at LMC, anywhere I went, anywhere I've been to. But this is something, again, I don't want it to become like tomorrow morning 500 people, again, unless obviously there is an urgent need and everything, and we do like, because I cannot hire right now like 460 people. But it's like, if If something like, I don't know, like kind of we need to bond, then we will do it. But again, I know how to build this culture, and I make sure that the leadership is keeping this culture. I mean, and it will remain like that, because again, the VP R&D, the new VP R&D, the new COO, the new VP of sales, of whatever EMEA and North America, and our and the VP of marketing, they all know what is my agenda. They all report eventually to me, and I want to make sure that we are aligned. And every single time there is a glitch, if there is any, I am aware, and we fix it, because they think like me, and when they think like me, they know how to just continue this generation as like and this culture, and I love it.
So you go through scaling, or you're in the process of it, I guess. How many more people are you thinking you're going to hire in, let's say, in the next 6 months? Or do you think like 40 for now, take a deep breath and then continue?
We always in a look for good talent.
Right. Everyone says that, and everyone means it. I know that, but.
No, but we are growing again. We still have bottlenecks. We still have a huge demands. We have hundreds of customers, and it is growing like Fortune list, like Colgate-Palmolive, like Avnet, like Eton Manufacturing. I mean, some of the Fortune that are even like a Fortune 50. But again, if you think about it, yeah, I do want, we are 40. We want to go to around 50, 55 by the end of this year. It is exponential growth, because people need to understand that it's not like, you know, like Checkmoint is a customer, okay? So Checkmoint today, they have whatever, 8,000 employees, give or take. When they go with whatever, when they do like M&A and they have like whatever, 200 R&D or 200 people that they add, it's not a lot. But if we go from 20 in January to 55, and again, bootstrap, again, it's not that someone gave me like, take 20 million, start hiring people without, you know, even we don't care about your revenue. But this is something that, this is why our culture is different. I'll tell you something else that actually that is so important. Our people are mainly R&D, I would say. Obviously sales, you know, sales is very easy to judge them if they are good or not. But our R&D, they know that everything that they develop and the salary that they get is only because or thanks to what they developed. And they know they are not going to do any whatever, like, let's write something that might be, you know, in the agenda in 3 years from now. No, they know that what they eat is because of what they write. And this is something culturally that everyone understands in Gitpol. From the R&D, even the customer success, and even the sales engineer, they understand if they do something wrong or if they fuck up, they know, because they understand that this is less income from the company. It's they feel part of the company in so many ways, because they understand that it's not only, you know, like the stocks, you know, equity, whatever. It's not only that. It's they really feel a huge part of Gitpol and the Gitpol family, because they know that it's not my customer, it's their customer. They know it's their money at the end of the day. And they are part of this, I would say, our Gitpol family ecosystem that we built, that people are so proud of. And people, that's why people, thanks God, people never left on their own.
Gitpol, right, okay? Thank God with Wadi, we're very, my business also, we're very good with that. And we're remote too. And you're remote also, right?
Yeah, we don't have.
So that's so fascinating. Maybe we could talk about that, because my company is 20 people and we're remote. We're all in Israel. While remote, we share very strong same culture. And you just went from 20 to 40 and God willing to 55 and then some. So I find, and I'll talk for 1 second because it's just so fascinating, that the culture, because we're remote, in a sense, we are often different than other people, than other marketing agencies, tech marketing agencies. We do things differently. So we attract people that don't necessarily live in the center of Israel. We attract people that might be young parents who want to go pick up their kids to school. We attract people that truly integrate their work and their personal life, and they know that their personal life is very important to them, and so is their work. And they don't think, and they understand that. And because of that remote thing, because of being remote. And I think what I just, what I'm hearing just from the many, many conversations I've had, you being both bootstrap, which I do want to ask you another question on that, and also being remote, just by definition, you're attracting a certain kind of people and that would come and work with you. And I think some people, they might want to look for, oh, VC back funded. Oh, we want a billiards table in our office and other things that make us feel good, that give us fake purpose and connection at our work environment.
Exactly. And we do have an office today for the R&D because we saw that the R&D, they want it. They love the brainstorming and but we don't do micromanagement. I don't really care who goes to the office or not. I mean, they just know that everyone carries something and they feel part of it. And it's like they don't want to let themselves down. They don't want to self us down. And it's so important because again, it is part of the culture because we give them a lot and then they give us in return. And it's all about, you know, give and take. And it's not about, you know, like give, or take, because you want that eventually they will have fun. They want your employees to tell you what bothers them, what bugs them, if we can address something. And that is why when our employees said, oh, the office is too small, I mean, the week after they moved to another one. Oh, we need more space, they got another one. I mean, we didn't really care, as long as they will be happy, as long as they will have fun, as long as, again, another thing that is really important is that there won't be a case where an employee won't get along with other employees. We need to fix it. And if not, someone must leave.
Right.
Because we are too small and too unique to have this, you know, like collision or something between the employees.
Yeah. Politics can really kill it. I want to ask you, so you're totally bootstrapped, even still now today, you haven't taken one check out?
Correct.
What does a conversation look like when VCs approach you, knowing that you're already bootstrapped and your revenue is already unique, and they're coming to you? What's that conversation like?
I won't lie that sometimes I do think about, hey, taking VC money would be good.
Why? Why would it be good?
VC money know people and they can help us. And they still can, I mean, even without investing in us, but they won't do it because they want something, they want some bite. And one of the problems... that raised all the time is that when I and RSA last week was amazing. So it's like Mor and myself and Tyson, our CIO, we had so many meetings and some of them were also with VCs, although they know that we don't really have time to that. But I wanted to hear how is it that they work, what is it that they offer. I wanted to hear something that is different. And something that I don't know, because again, Yaakov and Gilad already did it. I am the one that never did it, right? I mean, I'm the one that went from my first startup, bootstrap. And they are good people, seriously. I want to connect to good people, to the right people, and it is all about that. But on the other end, my employees, they know that they have a very nice bite in Gitpol, okay? They get something that is non-diluted, right? I mean, it's like not VC diluted. I mean, it's like, it's their own. And now when I will have another part in this, I would say in this family or in the 100% shares or equity, everyone will get diluted. So I don't want to disappoint them. And the part of the reasons why they joined is because we are bootstrapped, is because we are unique. So this is one thing. Another thing is that we see that their money won't really help us drastically to grow exponentially unless some magic will happen. I mean, they won't be our marketing or sales or build our pipe or do whatever. No, they will give me money. They will help a little bit. And then I will need to do the rest of the job. So I can generate the money myself. Why do I need to take $5, $10, $20 million? Okay, it's like, now it doesn't make any sense. I'm always open to hear, maybe I will change my mind in the future. But right now we are super proud and like being where we are. At the end of this year, we will be in 20 million ARR.
That's awesome.
So more than 11 million will be net new. And it is super important because again, seeing everything that is growing and naturally, Again, no VC money, but again, because the team is so unique, we have such a strong team that says a lot.
What do the conversations with VCs look like now when they want to approach you? Because my assumption is the conversations of a VC coming to you and saying, hey, we want to invest is very different from a startup going to a VC and asking for money.
It's like Mo was with me and a few of them, Tal, just take the money. It's like they just tell me, Tal, tell me how much. I mean, I want to invest. I want to be part. Everyone sees the success of Gitpol, and what happened at the hype of RSA was even 10 times bigger. Now everyone reaches out to us, you know, after the awards that we had.
What awards have you won?
So a couple of months ago, we had the Checkpoint Award in Vienna. So Gitpol won the competition.
Wait, it's organized by Checkpoint?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I pitch in front of 2,000, 3,000 people-ish. I don't know, like it was something like that. And then I mentioned also, hey, by the way, so Checkpoint, thank you for being a loyal customer. I mean, you are doing a justice with Gitpol. And then they just sent the account reps, just sent so many people, I mean, to the booth, to our booth. I mean, I needed to run because we went only the two of us, I mean, in the booth, I mean, Mor and myself. So like we ran back to the booth. And then so many people, so Mor and I mean, we needed to, you know, to keep tracking on their names and the organization. So it was, but it was extremely fun, 3 days event-ish. And it was amazing, but we just went a level up after this, so Mor helped us, gathered us into the AWS and CrowdStrike incubator. It's a plan, of, so and so weeks that we need to be there. And then we went out of hundreds of startups, only 8 were chosen to be on stage. We needed to prepare 3 minutes.
This is still Vienna or RSA? What are you talking about?
No, this is last week at RSA.
RSA, okay.
This is the step up. Out of hundreds of startups, only 8 went on stage. We were number 5. Everyone needed to have 3 minute presentations, and then the judges were the president of CrowdStrike, Galina, from the founder of Clarity, and CJ Moses, the CISO for Amazon. And then we had 2 minutes Q&A with them. I was number 5. They gave me the controller. The presentation didn't work. Nothing worked. Everything was crushed over there. You know, they tried for 30 seconds.
Everyone's presentation or just yours?
No, mine only. I was number 5. So 1, 2, 3, 4 went great. Now number 5. I mean, number 5. I mean, what a random number. Okay, so it didn't work. I mean, I was like, okay. And for 20 seconds. And I was like, okay, I just have more time. You know, let's do it without. 3 minutes I pitched Gitpol. And then they... Then two minutes-ish Q&A. After that, I just went down, from stage. Everyone just, I mean, didn't stop applause. People stopped me. When I went to sit back, people just stopped me and said, oh my God, you're going to win. Everyone. And then I did have a small competition with another great startup. And then Galina and everyone, just, you know, Galina just told me, you know, it was a no-brainer. It was, everyone just said, I mean, I, it just started. They
wait,
gave
wait,
me
what
boom,
do you,
Gitpol.
What do you think was like that one or two sentences that you think captured the judges, right?
Bootstrap, for sure. Profitable. And the fact that we do something, that we have paying customers, that everyone...
Wait, but you're not mentioning anything about your technology.
No, I did. In the 3 minutes, I mentioned Gitpol. I mentioned what we do.
Right. But the technology didn't differentiate you from the other 8 greats, from the other startups, right? Like from, you were chosen 8 out of hundreds to go on stage.
What I believe
between
is,
you and the 7 others, you're saying when you won, right? In the end, what do you think other than you're great, you're bootstrapped, you're profitable, and all that, it's great. But on top of that, that spoke to the judges more than the technology, because they're saying the market proves it. And it says something about the founders that can build something with such little money. That's more than the technology itself. Like that speaks more for itself.
I didn't ask them what really, what was more weight. I mean, like the weight was on the, on the, on the,
I,
the,
trying,
or the
yeah.
weight was, yeah. I believe, I believe that it was the combination, but if you'd ask me again, they know that I have no competition, but again, it's the way I explained it, the way I simplified the message. I believe it's all about how you say things. It's not the what, it's the how. Okay? You can be angry at someone. You can do so many things, but the way you tell them that, I mean, how angry you are, that's what changes everything. So that's, I believe, what happened. It's not like the other startups are not a great technology.
Right.
They are. Sure. But it's like, I just simplified it. Just, I amused the audience. It's like, it was very nice. They just wanted to give me the prize. And the prize was, oh yeah, you get the VIP tickets to CrowdStrike, whatever, CrowdStrike, CrowdStrike party. And I was like, wait, no, I want to speak again in the CrowdStrike booth in the AWS event.
Right, of course. I can sneak in any party. I sneak in a party exactly. All the time.
So they just said, you know what, just second. And it was like with more and more. Just to
the right. That's amazing. The you pushing yourself is the whole bootstrap thing. Is that I don't need other help. I know what I want. It's very Israeli, very chutzpanit.
Yeah.
Is that, this is what I want. Again, let me grab it. Let me ask for it.
And
you're going to give it to me.
Seriously.
Because good for you.
And thanks to Moore. Seriously, now we have at the Reinforce next month, 2 sessions with CrowdStrike. We go to their booth and we speak. So that is a huge thing, a huge achievement. And you know how many people go to the CrowdStrike booth.
Right. Yeah. It's a dub booth. Yeah. So where are we going from here?
Hawaii? No, just kidding. So it's like, it's like there are, the awards are nice, right? So yeah, I got even, you know, Gitpol was announced, the top 50 promising companies to watch out, blah, 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 from Calcalist. It's nice. It's amazing. It's important. I mean, the marketing, but we really need to build a great company. We really need to have more customers. Yes, I need to show my face and Gitpol's face everywhere I can. Okay, everywhere we can. That's the new culture. But more than that, we need to make sure that we keep having happy customers and growing our business and being all the time to have more and more things and opportunities. Never stop. And of course, like whether it is the roadmap and the integrations and the tech alliance and of course more customers, more events. I mean, all the time. I mean, we never stop. And our mind, you know, they say that a whale, okay, the whale has a brain that like split, like absolutely like separated into two, that at any given moment, half brain works. Okay, so in the whale never, I mean, the brain doesn't turn off. So that is why the whale never goes to sleep, but it's like the brain always works. So that's what I feel that right now, it's like, this is what we do in Gitpol. I mean, my brain for sure always works. I mean, it's like, it's
yeah, we know that you're always on. I love it.
But it's like, yeah. So I feel like a whale, but in a way, and it is really, really important. That's why we have the great team ever. I mean, I'm so blessed. I mean, they are superstars, amazing, and I thank God for having them. And right. Obviously, the founders, the family, yeah.
Amazing. If people want to keep up with this crazy brain of yours that doesn't show off, shut off, it doesn't show
well,
off.
Well, there are some differences.
Yeah. But what's the best way to keep up with Tal and her brain and what she's working on?
People need to, I need some intelligence, you know, intellectual brains and to do brainstorms. Sometimes when I need to just do nothing, I just open the TV and watch whatever. I don't know, more introduced me to whatever, Bravo, or whatever channel it is, but it was like doing nothing in front of a TV and watch, what is it, reality? Yeah, reality shows. So yeah, this, yeah.
I respected you up until this moment.
I needed some, you know, like...
No, I have my dumb... I watch YouTube shorts. It's how I shut my brain off. That's how I shut off at night. So if we want to keep up, what's the best place to follow you and Gitpol?
Well, we are very active everywhere. So it's like we have a big team in the US now. But to follow up, obviously LinkedIn and everything, but to follow up, so easy to reach out to us. I absolutely love getting to know good people, you know, like yourself, when you are bootstrap, I am bootstrap. You know how it is when we first, what, 2-3 years ago?
More than that. It was before COVID.
Before 3 years ago?
It was more, wow. I think more 4 years, I think. Wow. I don't know.
Time flies, right? So it's like, but yeah, getting to know new people all the time, that's amazing. So I'm half here, half in the US. So it really depends what day and the time. We do have a great event. It's in a month from now. We already crushed the number of invites. So we were planned to have like 100, 120. We already have 250 already registered. And I'm talking about not 250 random people, 250 customers. I mean, if only in Israel here. So yeah, I mean, like, let's say a group of small customers from, I don't know, Israel Aerospace, from Clalit Healthcare, from whatever. But again, it's like to see those people, wow. I mean, the love that they have towards Gitpol. It's so important.
Amazing.
So yeah. I'm going to be in the US and going to be back like a few hours before the show.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, I hope the jet lag doesn't kill you so much.
I hope so as well.
And also we'll put all the social media, please, to follow Tal and Gitpol on their website, of course, down in the description. Tal, thank you so much for being on our show. It was great having you. Thanks for hospitality. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming over.